This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Professor Larry Diamond of the Hoover Institution, Stanford University, writing most recently at Foreign Affairs, the distinguished publication that devotes itself to what is the problem, what is to be done. In this instance, it's about democracy itself. As Larry puts it, how to end the democratic recession. Larry, a very good evening to you. It's good to talk about this because there's so many rich examples in your essay. I want to seize on Mexico because it's our number one trading partner. It's in the news all the time, and it has a new president. AMLO, the former president, López Obrador, at his midterm, it's a six-year term, you don't repeat. There's no succeeding yourself under the Constitution. He attempted to engineer a majority in the Congress because he wanted to change the Constitution, something he managed at the end of his term with a sleight of hand. Sheinbaum couldn't be president for a month before the legislature was sworn in. How does this illustrate what you describe in your piece as competitive authoritarianism? Good evening to you, Larry.
Good evening, John, and thank you for having me back. Well, Andrés Manuel López Obrador has been, over the course of his career, long career politically, a left-wing populist, more in the style of Hugo Chávez in Venezuela. But like all authoritarian populists, he wanted to remake the political system to remove checks and balances and give him and his party and his movement more or less unchecked power. We know from our own constitutional theory and founding, my favorite phrase in constitutional theory is from James Madison in the Federalist Papers, ambition must be made to counteract ambition. And that countervailing ambition has to come from independent institutions, the legislature, but most of all, the judiciary and similar types of regulatory institutions that are not elected, that come to their authority through a different logic. And so what populists do when they come to power with their authoritarian ambitions is try to eviscerate these countervailing ambitions, these checks and balances, and one of their first targets is the courts. The problem, John, is that that often requires constitutional reform amendment in order to give them free rein over the judiciary. Sometimes they just go ahead, as Orban did in Hungary, and purge the judiciary if they've got enough votes in their parliament to do so. But Orban had and Erdogan had in Turkey what we call special majorities, enough of a parliamentary majority to amend the Constitution. And what happened in the June elections in Mexico is that AMLO, as he was leaving office, not only won a landslide for his successor, but won a landslide in the National Congress. And then, as you aptly described, used it even before his successor took office as president to force through this amendment to the Mexican Constitution. And the amendment makes all judges, not just lower level judges or state judges as in many U.S. states, elected, something that I think is not a good idea, but it makes the constitutional court elected. And since he has a juggernaut now politically, the party believes it will give them control over the courts, a very ominous sign for democracy and liberalism in Mexico.
If I understand, then, with the trappings of democracy, there is a way that populists can reorganize the system so that not only they stay in power, but their parties are likely to stay in power because they have control of the only checks and balances, which is the courts. The legislature can be intimidated. And we can anticipate Morena Party in Mexico continuing for many years, like a new PRI. Is that imagined, Larry?
Yes, the P, the Revolutionary Institutional Party, was the old authoritarian ruling party in Mexico. And the Peruvian novelist Mario Vargas Llosa had once called Mexico the perfect dictatorship because it had what you called the trappings of democracy outward, but not the substance of it in terms of truly free and fair elections and checks and balances. So the danger now is that you're absolutely right that Mexico will return to that. And the broader challenge we face to democracy, to go back to your original question, is not so much military coups. You still see that a little bit in Africa and Southeast Asia, Burma, Thailand. But for the most part, the way democracy dies these days is by authoritarian populists coming to power and then just gradually strangling it. And they take over independent institutions. They intimidate the media and often weaponize the state against them and their critics. And they leave a hollow shell of democracy. There are still multi-party elections, but they're no longer truly democratic. And people, to a considerable degree, lose their freedom.
A little history that Larry provides in his essay on foreign affairs. 2006, we regard as peak democracy. Okay, things were going well, or as the KGB once said, we were in good position to take over the world. And then, well, and then is an investigation Larry conducts in his piece. I want to seize on the one about Iraq. How did that possibly influence the falling away from democracy, Larry?
Well, you know, I think the war in Iraq, the 2003 U.S. invasion of Iraq, was a big mistake strategically. I've never questioned the motives of President Bush and his senior colleagues. I think they honestly believed, incorrectly, as it turned out, that Saddam had weapons of mass destruction and was an existential threat. But once we invaded, obviously, you topple a dictator, you want to leave a democracy in its place. And we needed to something morally to justify the massive investment of American resources. So there unfolded, I think, again, a well-intentioned project to bring democracy to Iraq. As you'll recall, John, I was briefly a part of it. And that did not go well. And the problem is that there was a backlash, not only a very violent backlash in Iraq, but a backlash in terms of American and global public opinion. And the project of promoting democracy by peaceful means, in solidarity and support of Democrats around the world, it lost ground. It lost kind of political and moral momentum. And while that was happening, other things were, you know, not too far ahead on the horizon. The financial crisis globally, which started in the U.S. in the savings and loan industry, the rise of social media with all of its polarizing and toxic effects, and then the resurgence of Russian and Chinese global power, and all of these have combined to create headwinds for democracy in the world.
The rise of China is a factor here, too, because in the 20th century, China was a very small part of the world's economic community. It is now a giant, and it practices democracy only for those inside the party. It is also an example of knitting together with other pseudo-democracies, competitive authoritarian regimes such as Russia and Tehran. So all of this is a new map here in the 21st century. I want to seize on one other insight in your piece, Larry, which is what you call the human factor. The men, and they're invariably men, but there was an exception in Bangladesh. The men who come to power and then immediately go to work, as the list is intimidating, authoritarian populists, anti-institutionalists, and reject people who reject pluralism. That's a polite way of saying they become dictators very quickly. Is that correct, Larry? Very quickly.
It's often correct, but not always. Hugo Chavez, when he was elected in 1998, he moved pretty quickly. The world wasn't recognizing it adequately at the time to set up an authoritarian regime with this veneer, this hollow veneer of democracy. But even there, it took him a few years. Erdogan in Turkey, it took him a while. You know, the actual pattern is that they move incrementally. And initially, because they're moving incrementally, it still looks like they're a democracy, just as Viktor Orban says in Hungary, we're just an illiberal form of it. We don't like, you know, permissive social rights. So often it takes them several years, and it may take the world many years to recognize that this gradual strangulation, you know, has left a body that still looks like a democracy. But you look closely and it's not moving, it's not breathing, it's not democratic.
I'm speaking with Professor Larry Diamond, the William L. Clayton Senior Fellow at the Hoover Institution, professor at Stanford University and the Spogli Institute for International Studies, an article in the Foreign Affairs, How to End the Democratic Recession. And now it's time to the playbook to claw back to 2006 when we come back. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.